Welcome to New World Notes, hosted by Kenneth Doust. Today, we plaintively ask, where are Esquire magazine's dubious achievement awards now that we really need them? We'll hear from Con Hallinan, singer David Rovix, and yours truly. I hope you'll stay tuned. I have been a magazine fan all my life. It probably really started when I was about 8. One day, I was searching for treasure in the town dump, and I found some. A whole roll of movie theater-type tickets, and a half dozen issues of a magazine that was new to me. No, it wasn't Playboy. That would have made a better story than this one. No, it was Boy's Life. That turned out to be a way cool magazine to my 8-year-old mind. There were always magazines in my house when I was a kid. The Reader's Digest, National Geographic, Time, the Saturday Evening Post, and then Look magazine when the Post went belly up. Red Book for Mom, and Together, the mid-month magazine for Methodist families. And of course, TV Guide. I think my parents owned only about 8 books between them. That's including the sex manual they hid in the linen closet. Surely no child would bother to go snooping in the linen closet, right? So they had about 8 books total. But we always had plenty of magazines. Then, in 8th or 9th grade in school, in my civics class, they had a unit on magazines that carried political articles. That's when my love of magazines really started to take off. The class examined The Nation magazine, The Reporter, The National Review, Saturday Review, Time, Newsweek, and U.S. News and World Report, The Atlantic Monthly, and Harper's. Maybe also The New Yorker. Maybe The New Republic. Possibly I.F. Stone's Weekly? Anyway, we studied at least a dozen of them, spanning the American political spectrum. Okay, that's a pretty narrow spectrum, but they spanned it. Great stuff. I loved it. Half of those titles are gone now, either entirely dead or else decomposed into some grotesque, internet-based, multimedia something or other. I.F. Stone's Weekly, The Reporter, Saturday Review, Newsweek, U.S. News and World Report, and, just the other day, The New Republic. All gone. Later, I discovered the more radical magazines, Ramparts, and The Realist, and Mother Earth News, and Avant-Garde. All also now dead and buried. Speaking of Avant-Garde, did you know that Avant-Garde magazine is one of the very few serial publications to have a typeface named after it? That puts Avant-Garde right up there with the Times of London. That's where the Times Roman typeface comes from. The Times of London commissioned it. Well, the Times is still with us, but Avant-Garde is most sincerely dead. Losing all those good magazines, one by one, was like watching my aunts and uncles die off. Not a personal calamity, but it does make me feel sad and wistful. Then there are the old magazines that changed for the worse. The ones you just want to shoot and put out of their misery. At the top of my list here is Esquire. I really liked Esquire, and I subscribed to it back in the 1970s. Back when they featured fine writing by the so-called New Journalists School. Long, interesting articles by the likes of Norman Mailer, Seymour Hersh, Terry Southern. back when they had those witty and wonderfully provocative studio photographs by George Lois on the cover. Now, Esquire is just a fashion magazine appealing to fashion and grooming conscious, trendy, upscale male yuppies who are still halfway in the closet and being coy. And completing its own degradation, in 2008, Esquire terminated its famous annual feature, the Dubious Achievement Awards. Each February issue, I think it was, the Dubious Achievement Awards would highlight some egregious follies and blunders by prominent public figures of the previous year. Each item would have a witty, ironic headline, followed by a short, factual news item, sometimes with an unflattering photo. Part of the fun was that the headline often didn't make sense until you had read the news item. Sometimes, not until you had read the next news item. Then you'd get the joke. On the internet last night, I found Esquire's final Dubious Achievement Awards. They were published February 2008. Here's a classic example. The headline reads, "And in an even bigger waste of resources, they brought her back." The news item reads, "NBC flew Ann Curry from New York to the South Pole for a report on global warming." Here's another item. The headline would take too long to explain. The item reads, "After dining at Sylvia's, a soul food restaurant in Harlem, Bill O'Reilly said on his syndicated radio show, 'I couldn't get over the fact that there was no difference between Sylvia's restaurant and any other restaurant, even though it's run by blacks, primarily black patronship.' He added, 'There wasn't one person in Sylvia's screaming, MF'er, I want some more iced tea.'" Isn't that a great item? Can you picture it? There's right-wing crackpot pundit Bill O'Reilly in a restaurant in Harlem, and the people are all just sitting there politely eating dinner, and not once does anyone shout out the word Mother Fletcher or something similar. O'Reilly is so rattled by the experience that words fail him, and he starts inventing new words, like the restaurant has a black patronship. Patronship? Maybe clientele just sounded too French to O'Reilly's patriotic ear. But I digress. One more item from Esquire's final Dubious Achievement Awards, covering the year 2007. The headline is, "So that was the tainted dog food?" And the item is, "In an effort to show that it was serious about improving the safety of its products, China executed its former top food and drug regulator." Anyway, in early 2008, completing its own self-imposed degradation, Esquire magazine announced that it had tired of and outgrown its annual Dubious Achievement Awards, and this set would be the last. Killing this feature freed up 4 pages for more photo spreads on the season's hottest $75 a bottle men's colognes, and the best new German electric shavers to give you that trendy one-day-old beard look each morning, plus more Hollywood celebrities and highlights of the new men's clothing displayed at the Milan Fashion Show this season. So, Dubious Achievement Awards, hail and farewell. We salute you. Esquire magazine, take a hike. And take Details magazine with you. And Men's Health, too. They are gone, but the dubious achievement awards remain a fond memory that I cling to. A memory like good public schools and honest elections and affordable health care. Every now and then, I find an item in the paper and think, that's perfect for the Dubious Achievement Awards. Here's one from my local rag a few days ago. I will summarize the beginning of Jeff Jacoby's column. Saudi Arabia sentenced liberal Muslim blogger Raif Badawi to a fine of $250,000, plus 10 years in prison, plus 1,000 lashes with a whip for the crime of insulting Islam on his blog. On January 9, the government delivered the first installment of his public flogging, giving him 50 lashes. 19 more installments to go. 2 days later, following the Charlie Hebdo murders, the Saudi ambassador joined the Great Paris Solidarity March in defense of freedom of expression. Where are the Dubious Achievement Awards now that we really need them? Surely the Keystone Pipeline would win a Dubious Achievement Award. Let's see if I've got this right. At an extremely large cost per barrel, they're mining the tar sands of Alberta, Canada, at great environmental cost, for some really dirty, low-quality, oil-filled glop. And they want to build a pipeline for the glop all across the United States to carry the filthy glop to refineries near the Gulf of Mexico. The pipeline company involved is famous for leaks, spills, and other ecological disasters. Why are they piping the crap from Canada all the way across the United States, down to refineries in the sunny Gulf of Mexico? Because when they refine the stuff into gasoline and other petroleum products, they're going to immediately load the product onto tanker ships and carry it off to be sold in Europe, South America, and Africa. The cold warriors of the Obama administration love the project because selling the oil in Europe will hurt Russia. Almost none of the stuff from the tar sands will benefit anyone in North America in any way, except the oil company stockholders. Okay, sounds like a plan. Where are the Dubious Achievement Awards now that we really need them? David Rovics can explain the pipeline better than I can. Here he is.
As soon as they started drilling for oil, they started building pipelines on the seabed through the forests and across the border lines. As soon as they started laying the pipe, they said, we'll do this safely. There will never be an accident. We can do this carefully. But the sands shift, the ice melts, disasters are routine. Point out their record of destruction, and they'll say their hands are clean. Point out their woeful deeds, and they'll consult their banker and say it's safer to use a pipeline than an oil tanker. So now they want to see how far their madness it can go. A pipeline from the tar sands to the Gulf of Mexico. A pipeline from the tar sands to the Gulf of Mexico. The tar sands lie in the north, beneath Alberta's ground. As the price of oil rises, the oil men have found. Now there's profit to be made in a madman's dream by drilling deep beneath earth, blasting it with steam, bulldozing the land, melting what's inside, a record of extinction 1,000 miles wide. But laying waste to the northern plains is evidently not enough. The capitalists need markets where they can sell this toxic stuff. So across the farms and prairies, the oil now must flow. A pipeline from the tar sands to the Gulf of Mexico. A pipeline from the tar sands to the Gulf of Mexico. Governors oppose it. Every native band. Ranchers don't want it passing through their land. Union leaders have denounced it, as have the rank and file. The president delayed it for just a little while. They say you can't stop progress. I hope that isn't true, 'cause if we mine the tar sands, if we let the pipeline through, it will be a pipeline to oblivion, a pipeline to the end, a pipeline to a future with nothing round the bend, a pipeline to a future that I hope we'll never know. A pipeline from the tar sands to the Gulf of Mexico. A pipeline from the tar sands to the Gulf of Mexico. Pipeline from the tar sands to the Gulf of Mexico.
David Rovix. And that's not even to mention global warming, caused in large measure by burning hydrocarbons. Which reminds me that the U.S. Senate just voted that global warming is not caused by burning hydrocarbons or anything else people have done. The Senate has now decided the issue, so it's all settled now, and we can stop worrying. What does the Senate think causes global warming, if not hydrocarbons? Probably Obamacare. Obamacare and gay marriage. And corporate taxes. And the teachers' union. Abolish those four, and we'll end all this nonsense about global warming once and for all. Where are the dubious achievement awards now that we really need them? We should give one to the Senate. Con Hallinan is a retired college professor, an essayist, blogger, and pundit. He's been filling in the gap with a more in-depth version of the annual Dubious Achievement Awards. He calls his awards the Are You Serious Awards. Last week's show replayed a couple of Hallinan's awards for the year 2011. Well, the new set is just out, covering the achievements of 2014, and let's hear a couple of those. These were published in Counterpunch on January 2nd, and I have edited them just a tad for radio. We'll hear a couple today and some more in later shows, that's a promise. But to start, some of the Are You Serious Awards for 2014 by Con Hallinan. The Golden Scold Award to Germany and Chancellor Angela Merkel for lecturing the Greeks on wasteful spending and forcing Athens to swallow crippling austerity measures, while at the same time bribing Greek military officials to spend billions of dollars on useless weapons. According to the Greek newspaper Katimerinai, arms dealers, mostly German, handed out close to $3 billion in bribes to secure $68 billion in weapons contracts from Greece over the next decade. With its people suffering under harsh austerity measures, Athens spent $2.3 billion to buy 170 German Leopard 2 tanks. Tanks which are largely useless for fighting in Greek terrain. The tanks were sent without ammunition, so Greece later coughed up $70 million to buy ammunition, also from a German company. The Greeks also paid more than $4 billion to purchase German U-214 submarines that are still in dry dock. From all accounts, these subs are very noisy. It is not good to be noisy in the silent service. According to Der Spiegel, the German company that makes the subs paid over $2 million in bribes to land the contract. In the meantime, the austerity policies forced on Greece by the International Monetary Fund, European Central Bank, and the European Union have impoverished millions of people. They have driven the unemployment rate to over 20%, 50% for those under age 25. Since 2008, Greek infant mortality has risen 21%, and child mortality is up 43%. Suicides are up 45%. In exchange for the $70 billion in new military spending, the Greeks got submarines that sit on the land, tanks they can't use, and lectures from Angela Merkel about saving money. Okay, here's another. Once again, the Golden Lemon Award goes to Lockheed Martin for its $1.5 trillion F-35 stealth fighter bomber, the most expensive weapon system in U.S. history. An airplane that can't get its software to work, won't fly in the rain, and burns up trying to get off the ground. The U.S. was forced to cancel the F-35's debut at a prestigious air show in Britain because a plane caught fire trying to take off from Eglin Air Force Base in Florida. The F-35 has since been restricted to lower speeds and 3 hours flying time, not enough to cross the Atlantic. Lockheed Martin and partner Austal USA also scored big in the Lemon category with their Littoral Combat Ships, or LCS, the USS Freedom, and the USS Independence. The $37 billion LCS program will build a fleet of shallow draft, high-speed warships. According to a recent Pentagon study, these ships will not survive combat. High Defense Department official Michael Gilmore says these ships are, quote, not expected to be survivable in a hostile combat environment and are not intended to be employed in a manner that puts them in harm's way, unquote. Translation, if they get in a fight, they're toast. But that might not be a problem because the ships require so much maintenance, they probably can't get to where the action is anyhow. Sidebar comment from me. I can't help noticing that the middle name of Littoral Combat Ship is Combat. Well, just don't take it literally, even though the name sort of invites you to. Littoral Combat Ship. Where are Abbott and Costello now that we really need them? No, Costello, it's not literally a combat ship. It's a literal combat ship. Abbott, what have you been drinking, and where can I get some? Of course, the literal is spelled L-I-T-T-O-R-A-L. The word means seashore. The perfect vessel for the next time we attack the beaches of Normandy, or Fort Lauderdale, or more likely, the shores of Tripoli. Except the ship isn't designed to withstand combat. Hit it with 2 9-millimeter bullets from a Glock handgun and down it goes. Fortunately, it's the seashore, so the water isn't very deep. Think of all the lives that will save. All the sailors who will not drown when the ship goes down. Of course, there's still that guy on the beach with the Glock they have to worry about. Your tax dollars at work. $37 billion. What would national health care cost? But back to the text. How about the Mouse That Roared Award to the Marshall Islands for hauling the nuclear-armed powers, the U.S., China, Russia, France, Britain, Pakistan, India, Israel, and North Korea, before the International Court of Justice at The Hague, for violating Article 6 of the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. Article 6 requires the nuclear powers to begin disarming. Not all the countries named have in fact ratified the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. But it's hard to argue with the Marshall Islanders on the subject of nukes. In 1954, the U.S. vaporized Bikini Atoll with a 15-megaton hydrogen bomb and irradiated thousands of islanders. Over a period of 12 years, the U.S. detonated some 67 nuclear warheads with an aggregate explosive power of 42.2 megatons in the Marshalls. By comparison, the Hiroshima bomb was 15 kilotons. Sidebar comment, that is, the United States clobbered the Marshall Islands with the equivalent of 3,000 Hiroshima atomic bombs. Back to the text. The Marshall Islands Nuclear Claims Tribunal found the U.S. liable for $2 billion in damages. So far, Washington has paid out only $150 million. It wasn't just the Marshall Islanders who got zapped. Heavily contaminated U.S. Navy ships stationed in the Marshall Islands were scrapped and buried around the San Francisco area, including at Treasure Island. Then, at Treasure Island, a 2,000-unit low-income housing project was built on top of this radioactive waste. Government authorities assured the residents there that there is nothing to worry about. Then they warned residents not to let their children dig in their front yards or backyards. "Look, Mom, this rock glows in the dark." Radiation, the gift that keeps on giving. And there, let us pause our reading of Con Hallinan's Are You Serious Awards for 2014. Just out, just published this January 2015. Esquire's dubious achievement awards are gone, but their spirit lives on in Are You Serious Awards and in New World Notes. And thank you for listening. You'll find an archive of all our broadcasts at our website, which is newworldnotes.blogspot.com. From Darkest Connecticut, this is Kenneth Doust. Illegitimi non carborundum. Always look on the bright side of life, and please tune in again next week. Ciao.